Betches Media presents...
I would like to speak to America's men for 1 minute.
That slacker barista.
I start getting full of emotion.
Now we're going to build this new bridge here.
Can I provide a definition? Mm-hmm. No, I can't.
Betches Up Podcast.
Like, how are people surviving?
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. It is Monday, so we'll get right to our weekend headlines. Elise, I'm going to start with you. Would you describe your weekend in a news headline?
Okay. My headline, I'm going for like a TMZ People Page Six type headline. So my headline is TBT alert. Original friend group cast reunites for Brooklyn surprise party.
Listeners, the visual impact of this headline is quite compelling, I will say. Elaborate, please.
I'm first of all, for our listeners, I'm dressed in a very intense way for this recording because I had an audition immediately prior to this where I had to audition to be a mean bartender. So I do look like a mean bartender.
Yeah. And you look, this is the harshest I've ever seen you look.
Yeah, I'm wearing like very dark lipstick. The cat eye is long. I have my turtleneck and gold chain combo.
Your Cuban link chain.
Yeah. I'm giving the rock. But
you're giving Elizabeth Holmes a witness protection.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Well, Elizabeth Holmes, when she splits her cell with Jen Shaw, because they might be in the same jail.
That's so incredible.
You'll maybe be so lucky.
Yeah. My headline is basically I went to a friend's surprise party this weekend, which I was realizing, like, I don't think I'd ever surprise partied anyone before. I've never been surprise partied. I don't think I had ever done one. So that
it sounds
was
like a crime when you say it like that.
I know. It is something
I've
that is
never
done
been
to
surprised.
You.
One
I've
out of five women is surprise partied. Yeah.
What I was gonna say, you know, maybe I'm reading this wrong, but there are some people who are too type A for I don't know. Like, let me step back. There was this girl a few years ago, this viral video of a guy who made a Pinterest wedding, like a Pinterest surprise wedding for this one girl based on her Pinterest page.
Absolutely.
And
not.
Like, my friend was like, I will literally kill my fiance. Like, he proposed to her and had the wedding the same day from her Pinterest page. And it's like, some people don't want to be surprised.
Definitely not. So, did this person seem happy with the surprise?
Yes. This was actually a big topic of discussion at the surprise party. It was like a lot of just my friends from when I really first moved to New York. So that was really nice to like get together and see everyone and hang out again. You know, since the pandemic, it's like you don't get together all the time anymore. So that was really nice. But yeah, big topic at the surprise party is like, who is a good candidate for a surprise party? And it has to be someone who like doesn't care about their birthday that much, because someone who does care about their birthday that much, number one, is probably just going to plan something for their own birthday. Or number two is just going to feel really sad that everyone's ignoring their birthday.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you have to find someone who's like a good mix of like, does enjoy socializing, but doesn't like need a birthday party in their life. And this person, I think, was that good mix. But we were talking at the party about a friend who like, okay, so they're mom's friend just had a surprise 70th birthday, and now their mom is being like, man, I sure do wish someone would throw me a surprise 70th birthday. It's like you're in this weird place of like the person seems really sad that they think the surprise 70th birthday isn't happening, but you want a surprise, so you don't know until the day if it's happening. Another friend was talking about how like he was gonna surprise his mom for her like 60th birthday and come home and be like, surprise, I'm here. But as the day was approaching, like his mom was just getting really sad that no one was coming home for her birthday. And
that's
it's like,
so funny.
You have to tolerate the person potentially being really sad and feeling bad. And so it's a delicate balance. But I do think that the person who we surprised was like a perfectly surprisable person.
My college, when, you know, famous My college literally is like on a hill in fucking Southern California near Laguna Beach. There was nothing to do. There was only, at most, there would be 450 people on campus. And that's like at most, because half of the junior class is on study abroad, mandatory study abroad. So for people's birthdays, we would do crazy. We would literally kidnap people. We'd put a pillowcase over there. It was so fucking stupid. But a tradition is when it's someone's birthday, we put a pillowcase over them, push them in a car, drive them around campus, and then end up in a random living room. So it's their surprise party.
Okay.
I know. So I don't know. Surprises are crazy.
All right, anyway. Millie, your turn for your headline.
My headline is, this would be like a cut article. Mm-hmm. And it would just be, men love drama. And because I watched Banishees of Inisherin this weekend.
I love that movie.
Like, these motherfuckers love drama. The only like rational, well, I want to say not all the women were rational, mm-hmm. but the sister was the most rational one. This guy's like, if you don't stop talking to me, I'm going to cut off my fingers. And like, it was just so much drama. Colin Farrell, so much drama. So much drama. I had a family member call me with drama. Mm-hmm. It was just drama. Men love drama. I don't know. So that was my weekend. It was like, these motherfuckers love drama.
They love drama. They really, really do.
Banishees of Inisherin, I feel like, would win an Oscar if it wasn't competing against Tar or Everything Everywhere. If it was a Green Book, if it came out the year of Green Book, it would win. But I'm sorry, it's going to go to Tar, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I listened to a podcast about the Oscars by NPR put it out. I think it's their Pop Culture Happy Hour people. And they were talking about how because the Oscars, the ballots are ranked. It's like a preferential choice ballot. So if you're everyone's
second choice,
you can end up winning. And one person argued that the younger voters are all going to vote Everything Everywhere All at Once. The older voters will vote for The Fabelmans. But if everyone puts Banshees at number two, then Banshees could end up winning it because it was high up on everyone's ballot, even if it wasn't their number one, which is
an argument for ranked choice voting.
Yeah. Unless it takes it away from Everything Everywhere at Once, and then suddenly we will all turn against it. Mine is a pretty common headline, I think, for many of us, which is, dumb bitch switches meds without considering impact on alcohol consumption. Every couple of years, I have to switch my SSRI. I don't know if you guys, you might have this journey, Millie, but just eventually it's like when you just have like a hyperfixation meal and eventually it disgusts you. It's just over time, my neurotransmitters are like, no, I'm not eating this. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And so I got to switch it up. And that's fine. I don't really notice much of a difference, except some of them really don't let you drink. I only drink on the weekends now, and I had three strong drinks on Saturday, which is a lot. It's a lot. Like, I was going to be hungover anyway, but I had a migraine where you were like, I have to go to the hospital. This is what they mean when you're having an aneurysm. When people are like, the worst pain you've ever had in your head. And I was like, this is it. So, if you're going to do that, if you got to do a little switcheroo, just remember that they don't all let you imbibe the way that you used to.
Oh,
shit.
So
now I know that.
Yeah. Important PSA.
Or they have various impacts. Like, you might not get like a migraine or hungover, but you can get like, it'll take you longer to get drunk, and then you get like too drunk. It's a journey, and you got to make sure that you're looking into that. Alrighty, now unfortunately on to our news segment. You heard it here second. Okay, so we do have to start today, of course, by discussing the breakup on everyone in America's minds. We saw the headlines. We know. George and Kellyanne Conway. Not that one. Okay. I have in my outline, Vanderpump Rules acknowledgement, because we do not, the three of us, this is a gap for us. None of us watch Vanderpump Rules. I know, Elise, you are not the biggest Bravo person, but me and Millie are, but don't watch.
No. I get discouraged by, I feel like I can't jump into these franchises that have such a long history, and asking my Vanderpump Rules friends about what is going on and hearing everything has confirmed to me that there's too much yeah. in the world for me to like enter it now, which is kind of how I feel. I was able to do Real Housewives of Salt Lake City because I was like, oh, this is a new franchise I can start at the beginning. But with the other ones, I feel overwhelmed by the long histories between
all
these people.
I would say you can do Miami and you should do Miami because there's three Cubans on there.
She can do Potomac too. Potomac isn't the library is still only about 7 seasons on Potomac. But yes, we know that Tom and Ariana have broken up. Dylan Hafer at Betches has done more reporting and longer investigative nights than I have ever done working at the Betches Sup, just with the drama. He's the king of this. And I had been like toying with starting Vanderpump Rules from the beginning because I felt like I needed something like that. And I'm like working on some like a couple like easy side hustles that I just like need something in the background. And so, yeah, this definitely I watched almost all of season 2 yesterday. I'd watched one in real time, but I'm gonna catch right up. But really, congratulations to legacy viewers.
Yes.
When you get this kind of payoff, even though I am not one, I do have the FOMO, and you deserve this. We know the community is reeling, but you also deserve this. You deserve this.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I feel like once in a while, being a loyal fan to a franchise like this pays off in a really long con kind of way. And now everyone who's watched the beginning and the inception of this and all of that, because again, I don't watch Vanderpump Rules. I watched all the fucking recaps on TikTok and now I get it. And I'm like, man, I can see like how this pays off if you're like, I don't know.
Well, I'm in season 2 and Tom and Ariana are about to like get together and I'm like, they're together that whole time. Okay, this is going to be good. I'm going to get on that journey. But we're thinking of you and the coverage will be at elsewhere on the Betches universe. To add a little bit more context to the other breakup, George and Kellyanne Conway, the two posted a joint statement because we are in fact actually talking about that they are in the final stages of an amicable divorce. In case you didn't know, this was a bizarre marriage because the whole time Kellyanne Conway worked as an advisor for Trump, her husband George was eviscerating the former president on Twitter. But George Conway is really remembered as being like big at dragging Trump on Twitter. And as I was writing these notes, I just did remember that like people made full careers from messing with Trump on Twitter. And just like how much Twitter has fallen already since Elon took over is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. It's bad on there. I am like really debating deleting it and just creating like a dummy account so that I can find tweet of the day for sup.
Mine's hacked. I can't get into it. I haven't been able to get into it for two weeks. Nobody I don't think anyone has the job. They deleted my avatar. I think they're probably just sending DMs, but I can't get in. I've tried everything. I don't think I'm ever getting back in there.
Don't buy a laptop from Amanda on Twitter, guys. Don't give Amanda money for crypto on Twitter. That is not her.
Yeah.
I got the thing where they were like, you have to remove two-step verification because now only people who pay for the weird paid-for Twitter can get it. So finally, I just removed it because I was like, I'm sick of getting this notification. And then as soon as I got the notification, I got another notification that was like, you really should use two-step verification. I was like, what is, like, this is a garbage website.
That's exactly what happened. And I got hacked like literally like 2 hours
later. Also genuinely, like, Twitter actually really used to be helpful to me in the newsletter because they used to have the like moments section and I could kind of go through and they were actually really good roundups of like a bunch of sources on a topic, what people were saying. Like, it was actually really helpful. And now that's completely gone. And the news section is just hashtags that are trending. And it's all just like weird right wing shit that I'm not putting in the newsletter. And it's just completely like, its usefulness has devolved a lot for me personally. And so I do feel that my time on the website is waning, but I just haven't been able to like actually do it.
Well, last week there was a viral tweet in Black Twitter about this gay couple who said that unfortunately they found out that they're actually half brothers, but they're not going to break up. And it was trending and everyone kept talking about it. I think it might be a joke. Like, people are saying it's a joke, but even like the energy that dark to even joke about that, I can't get off Twitter. It's too good.
I know. I do feel like every time I try to get out, they pull me back in with some shit like that where I'm like, okay, but it is funny to be able to like watch shit go down on Twitter. It is actually like a loss of, not to use like Elon's parlance, but a public square that now the website sucks and isn't good. And actually, Crooked Media did an episode this weekend that I sent to you, Millie.
Mm-hmm. I listened to it.
Where about Black Twitter and like specifically what that space has meant to people. It's on their offline podcast and it was really, really good. And like the guy who they're interviewing is like, it actually is a huge loss of a space if it does go down. So it is kind of a bummer that Elon bought it on a whim and decided to tank it for no reason.
Yeah, asshole. I also am like, I love that we started talking about Kellyanne Conway and George Conway's divorce and we actually just talked about Twitter because we missed that and love that more because honestly, Kellyanne Conway, yeah, I know, they're both fucking terrible people. George Conway's a dick. And Kellyanne is, you know, she worked for Trump, so already off rip bad. And there's some weird abuse things with her daughter.
Like, yeah, remember when her daughter was like really going off on TikTok about their home life being horrible?
Well, she would like record. She would actually do like sleuth recording of her mom. And it was not cool the way that Kellyanne was talking about her fucking teenage daughter. And somehow I think George was like better about it or like trying to, you know, it just seemed very sloppy. They're two shitty people. Like, it also, like, at the end of the day, even though Donald Trump is a terrible person, it's fucked up to talk shit about your wife's boss consistently online. Like, it just shows that you don't give a fuck about your wife's career. You don't, you know, I don't know, yeah, but like, I'm like,
well, it's also like to make your whole platform be, I hate my wife's boss, is very, but also it's like, how much can you hate him? How much can you actually stand against him if half the income in your home is coming from this administration? Like, are you divesting yourself from Kellyanne's money here? Because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, it's nice that you don't like Donald Trump, but like Trump money is keeping you happy and rich in your home. So it's just like, I never really bought him as like an anti-Trump guy. I think they probably are. I mean, for he's married to Kellyanne Conway. So they're both two feckless, craven people. Mm-hmm. And she, at least she does it with her whole chest.
Exactly.
You know what I but mean?
Right. That's the thing. I mean, the only reason I brought up this story, that we have no love lost for them, but I just wanted to bring
it's
up
so
Trump's
funny.
Reaction,
it's
which
so
was
funny.
Hilarious. Elise, will you read it?
Yes, I would love to read it. How do I get into my Donald Trump? You're fired. Okay. Congratulations to Kellyanne Conway on her divorce from her wacko husband, Mr. Kellyanne Conway. Free at last. She has finally gotten rid of the disgusting albatross around her neck. She is a great person and will now be free to lead the kind of life she deserves. And it will be a great life without the extremely unattractive loser by her side.
I mean,
extremely unattractive loser.
It's a serve. I'm sorry. He's good at this. It's unfortunate. I don't like it, but he's good at this.
Please, if I get divorced, post something like this about me. I know that Danny is not an extremely unattractive loser, but please post this if we go through, even as they say, an amicable divorce, and I will do the same for all of you.
This is really what all of Ariana Maddox's friends should be posting right now, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
That hot albatross.
No, man. That, God, Trump is so, it sucks, man. But again, this is why it's upsetting. If he just spent his life on the sidelines spewing dumb shit, he would be fine. But because he fucking had to be president, a million people died from COVID. You know what I mean? It's just like fucked
up. Yeah, he unleashed like untold horrors of hatred. And like he was like the funnel for just some absolutely horrible shit, which we're actually going to get touch on today. But like if he wasn't that, he'd be really funny.
And he'd be really funny.
Calling him a disgusting albatross and an extremely unattractive loser is really funny.
I mean, it's like the Real Housewife, except in a much more dangerous version, who's like the absolute worst, most evil one. But like her confessionals are giving, like she definitely has like a gay writer writing some things for her. The thing is,
Trump is the gay writer. And that's right. The thing, you know, Trump is the gay writer.
Again,
I think rule about his message to Elon Musk, or his post about Elon Musk once a day from Truth Social. And the fact that Trump is not even, he didn't even go back to Twitter. Like, God, he's so, but you can't even see.
Well, he didn't go back to Twitter, but he is going to CPAC. So we're going to touch in a little bit about this, which you also heard second. The Conservative Political Action Conference actually has had kind of a waning influence in the last year after embracing the extreme far right flank and even inviting international fascists to speak. They had the Viktor Orban last year. And most recently also, they kind of fell out of favor because the chair was sued for sexual misconduct based in actions while working on the Herschel Walker campaign. I feel like you got a really sexual misconduct to get kicked out of the Herschel Walker campaign.
Yeah,
but I don't know. According to CPAC, but this was interesting, on Friday, according to CPAC, they're not letting anyone through. They say they removed white supremacist anti-Semite Nick Fuentes from the premises after he tried to enter. And the chair, the same sexual misconduct on the Herschel Walker campaign guy, said that Fuentes isn't allowed in because hateful racist rhetoric and actions are not consistent with the mission of CPAC, which I think begs the question, what type of rhetoric was at CPAC? Well, certainly nothing hateful about calling for transgenderism to be eradicated from public life, which was a point that was made. Certainly not Don Jr. unleashing a disgusting ableist invective against Senator John Fetterman and most Americans with disabilities, saying that they should just be bad guys, that that's what Fetterman should be doing. And certainly not Donald J. Trump himself, who assured supporters that he was their chance at retribution in a very chilling statement.
In 2016, I declared, I am your voice. Today, I add, I am your warrior. I am your justice. And for those who have been wronged and betrayed, I am your retribution. I am your retribution. Not going to let this happen.
It's one of those things where it's like, from anyone else, I'd like love this. Like if some like influencer was like, I am your warrior. I am your justice. I'd be like, yes, Ashley, please help me. But it's Donald Trump. So, you know, it's interesting because the most discourse I've seen around CPAC is like, wow, how far it has fallen since Ronald Reagan unveiled his brand of conservatism in 1974. But it's like, no, this is the natural conclusion.
Yeah.
Of course, this is where it
ended. Exactly. I mean, well, I think what's interesting is that, like, it's fallen in the sense that major people don't go. Like, Ron DeSantis went to some donor thing in Palm Beach and didn't even go. And, like, Mike Pence didn't go, which is cute. He thinks he's a candidate. It's adorable that he thinks anyone wants him to be the president, but he does, and he didn't go.
Karen, I'm not going to CPAC.
Okay. 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 That's fine. Drink your milk.
Drink your milk. That's exactly what I was going to say.
The speech, the like, I am your retribution quote, does seem like something like Batman would say. Yeah. Like, you can hear it in the like,
yeah.
I am your voice. I am your warrior. I am your justice. I will, yeah. For anyone in Gotham.
So you hear it, Batman. I hear it from my Peloton instructor. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. That's also true.
But nothing from a presidential candidate.
No, it's very like, it's like his original inauguration speech. It's very like fire and brimstone, American carnage, crazy, whatever. But I mean, I think the main and most disturbing thing is just like the number of attacks on trans people that were made. Like, it was constantly being harped on about trans people, the quote unquote gender ideology, this guy who said transgenderism should be eradicated and then tried to go on Twitter and be like, I didn't say trans people should be eradicated. I said transgenderism. And I'm like, okay, how do you eradicate one? How do you eradicate that without eradicating the other? Yeah. Like, that's really, really,
I don't think
scary.
Trans people should die. I just think anyone who transitions.
Well, saying that you can get rid of racism by getting rid of everybody who's not white or the oppressed race. Like, no, well, that's not really.
And then, and there you have Stephen Miller's policy, immigration policy. I will also say,
but he said exactly what he meant.
Yeah. Well, I will say too, that it's so interesting. We talk all the time. Like, I think one way to frame conservatism is to try to understand what they mean or what they're saying. So it's like, they really view them. I mean, this, like, I'm your justice, I'm your warrior for wrong and betrayed. All I'm thinking is, like, in what ways has conservative people been wronged and betrayed in this country? And is it because, again, because to me, seems like they're what, you know, what, but I feel like, again, the wrong and betrayalness is perhaps what we talk about. And by we, I mean, what I bring up every time we have this thing of, like, the slight, the ever so slight shift in power and consciousness of white maleness in this country to be a little bit more inclusive and a little bit, and again, it's this betrayal and wrong, and they're the victims, and we need to make America great again and shift back and all this shit. And that's all I can think about when I'm reading and seeing what Donald Trump is saying at this conservative conference, because I'm just like, what other ways are these people victims of anything?
Yeah, and it's really just, again, like, they're harping on the trans thing because they feel personally victimized by the fact that trans people can exist a little more safely in our current society. I'm not even saying that they can exist safely because they're still the victims of a lot of violence. There's all of these bills targeting them and trans kids, the drag queens, all of this stuff. Like, trans people actually aren't safe in this country, but the fact that they're slightly safer to live publicly and that there is a shift in the ability for a trans person to actually transition and not be completely shunted to the outskirts of society on a level where, like, they literally cannot work, cannot get a job, cannot exist properly, etc. They feel victimized by that. I mean, they're constantly in CPAC going on about wokeism, da da da. And it's like, what is that to them? What it means is, like, literally considering anyone's identity with regard to anything. They feel victimized by that.
Exactly. And that's what's disturbing about this is that there, you know, and we talk about it all the time. And again, we talk about, I bring up, there are actually things that people are victims of. We have a healthcare system that is tied to employment that no other developed country has. We have insane housing issues in this country with how the prices of housing and food prices and all this stuff. There are actual things that people, you can argue that a lot of people are victim of, but that's not what they're talking about. Again, Donald Trump and all these elite conservatives don't have those problems. Feel the impact. So what do they feel the impact of? Wokeness and trans, you know, it's just like so transparent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the way that the conservative movement and conservatives function, especially since Ronald Reagan, is that, like, they associate things with a certain amount of privilege, and the idea that other people getting even close to that privilege is they have to go and be this hateful because transgender people have too much rights. But like Elise said, like, I think very few Black trans women make it to the age of 35. This is not a scourge. This is not something that they need to be talking about, but this is really the only thing that they have as part of their platform. Finally, today we have Herman OK.
Not me.
Goat's milk latte drinking.
M&M's will not be satisfied until every last cartoon character is unappealing.
Avocado toast eating insiders elite.
That does not lend credibility to your argument. It makes you look mean.
A slightly different version today, because obviously, as Millie mentioned, men are dramatic. Men are popping off at CPAC. We have our men okay today that I regret to say relates to President Joe Biden. He has you know, this behavior, there's a spectrum of men behaving badly. I want to say that before you come at me and compare this to some of our previous, our men, okay, because this will demonstrate that there's clearly a spectrum. But, you know, some of Biden's most important allies are not happy with him. I don't want to get too detailed here because I'll get it wrong and embarrass myself to our DC listeners, which I've probably done before. And I don't want to like say details that are wrong because this is kind of confusing to me. But the Washington City Council basically recently updated its criminal code, its crime code, in a way that included some lower maximum sentences for a number of offenses. It also had some electoral reforms, such as allowing non-citizens the right to vote. The mayor vetoed that because she said that it sent the wrong message about crime. A lot of people feel some type of way about their mayor, Muriel Bowser, in D.C. And since D.C. doesn't govern itself, the Constitution gives Congress that authority. The House had to actually approve this. The House of Representatives, the U.S. House of Representatives has to approve this. That's run by Republicans, as we regrettably know, who voted Thursday to overturn the city council's changes to its criminal code. Biden said on Friday that he would not veto the Republican House's action. So he's like, the Republicans vetoed it. I agree with them. I am not going to let the DC Council govern themselves. He said in a tweet that he supported home rule, but didn't support some of what the council put forward, which is just saying two totally separate things. You can't say both of those things. He specifically didn't like sentences around carjacking. It was very specific. And even the mayor, even though she wanted to veto the legislation, she wanted Biden to veto, this is so confusing, veto the Republicans. She didn't want him to do this because she was like, home rule is ultimately most important. If our council decided to do this, that should be respected. But the president is saying, no, I'm not going to interfere here. So a lot of House Democrats are really upset about this, not just because he's undoing the actions of his own party in the city where they all live, but because they thought they were all on the same page about this. They might not have said openly that they supported these changes to the criminal code. Had they not known that Biden was going to come out against it, they worry that he's made them look soft on crime. Another element here is about 45% of DC's population is Black. It's definitely has a larger Black population than most cities, and those are voters. So it's just undoing the will of Black voters, which is not great. So why do you think he did this? Do you think this is getting like Biden just personally not being up to date on criminal justice reform? Do you think this is a political move to get ahead of 2024? Did he just get this wrong personally? Is this man okay?
I think that Democrats in general now and historically have been scared shitless on the issue of crime. They do not know how to address it other than to cave to Republican conservative thought. They are very scared of being seen as weak on crime. That's how we got all of these horrible crime bills out of the Clinton administration, which Joe Biden was a part of creating. And I think that Lori Lightfoot losing in Chicago, which was result of a lot of things. Like a lot of people were not happy.
Another thing
we
didn't talk about here, because I was just like, there's got to be so much Chicago context that like we might not know, but yeah.
Yeah. Like people on the left were not happy with Lori Lightfoot either. But one of the overarching narratives about why she lost in Chicago is that she was not seen as dealing with a rise in crime there, and that a lot of mayors in general have faced crime-related issues at the ballot box. People say that the reason why New York lost so many seats was crime-related. So Democrats are they do not know how to stake out their own position on this. And, like, it's always this tepid, like, we should have some police reform, but not too much, and not this, and I am tough on crime, and da-da-da. And so I think that this is a reflection of that.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Biden, again, this is why people voted for him, is like, because he's going to try to work with Republicans as much as he can, even if Democrats don't, you know what I mean? Because again, you know, a criticism of Biden, why I personally didn't vote for Biden in the primaries, was because of his old school philosophy of like, back in my day, Republicans and Democrats used to share a beer and all that shit. And like, he's dying to get back to that. So he's willing to make Democrat, you know, again, in a way where a Republican would never do this. Even if they personally disagreed, they would never step out of line to fucking make a point to try to make concessions with Democrats. Like, they could never recover. But fucking always Democrats feel the need to do this. And especially, again, this is the criticism when people like, ultimately, I voted for Biden. Many people voted for Biden, but this kind of behavior is what gets people, progressive voters, apprehensive of voting for Biden. And it's everything that Elise said, too. It's this fear of looking soft on crime. It's all this stuff, you know. You don't want to upset. There are, you know, many, many factors that contribute to increases in crime and all of that. And frankly, those are very complicated things. Like, they're very complicated problems. They're very complicated solutions. And the easiest solution seems to be to throw money at the problem, give cops more power, give cops more money, and don't do anything that would change crime in a, you know, change these points of view in a big way. I mean, you know, again, like at its core, like this is what the criticism is. It's like there's no innovative thinking. There's no way to like really transform things. It's to keep things status quo, you know, and whether it's no to Republicans. And I mean, it's a really unfortunate thing, you know, because again, this is showing like the, you know, the fractures of our party, which is like just a Republican would never do, like, make Democrats look dumb and bad. And now the result will probably be that any, like, because this was a fairly conservative reform, you know, it wasn't even like that big of a deal. It wasn't that big sweeping or anything.
And as we're talking, I just feel like mainstream Democrats, like, we wouldn't be talking about it on the step if Biden did what the party, I'm not sure, maybe it would have become bigger, but more people, I feel like, might find out about this, about Biden getting out of step with the party, and not even because of this. And also, it's like, for all of the reasons we've talked about for addressing criminal reform, it's just like, you can't do that for any other city. So it's like, why don't you trust that the city council, as much as any other city council, it's just like a very strange, it's like the only time, like, it's just a very, it's obviously an upsetting dynamic. And the fact that it's crime in a majority, in a heavily Black city, like, just adds to it so much. And it just, it seems like, I don't know, I feel like he didn't get the political consulting on this. He should have.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely brings up the DC statehood argument, because it's like, it's actually not okay.
It's appalling.
Like, these people elected legislators to create laws. They created those laws. This system worked as it would in any local place. And now, mm-hmm. like, the federal government's going to step in and basically tell them no to score political points on certain issues. I mean, maybe one of the things, because if Biden did like veto it, wouldn't that be his first veto? So maybe he was a little worried that it would get a lot of press because it was like his first veto or whatever. So maybe he just didn't want to go to bat for this, for that reason.
There's no political win, probably. But
it's also like, yeah, I mean, you should stand for people being able to govern themselves, and DC statehood really should be a thing. I don't know how we get there. Yeah. I have no idea how we get there.
A bunch more senators.
And I think that's, I think that is also probably a fear too, is like, as you're speaking, like, yeah, it probably would have gotten attention. And again, the headlines that Republicans twist, and even, you know, even the media in general would say like Biden soft on crime and all this. And it would be like a talking point for 2024, which, you know, like, I understand that strategically.
They would have taken they would have taken the next crime carjacking that happened and put it in their next ad saying, but Biden did this.
But again, me personally, and what I would find, like, I mean, my kind of overall criticism and what we talk about is that Why are we letting Republicans fucking set the standard and set the conversation and all this stuff? And like, I'd rather have a president who doesn't give a shit and does the right thing every time. But
exactly. Perfectly said. Yeah. That is our show for today. We will be back Thursday and I will have fixed my mic by then. I'm sorry. People always DM like, Amanda, I just want to make sure you know. And I know we were having some mic problems today, but they will be fixed. And that is our show until the end of democracy. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
We're good. And this is the Bitches Up Podcast. Bye.
The Bitches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @Betches_sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.